I've got a little introduction.
Yes, please do. Please do. I'll be ready for it.
Excellent. Well, hello, everyone. For those that don't know me, my name is Jack Aaron, and I'm a business psychologist who specializes in the assessment of personality type. Today, I'm honored to be interviewing Dan Tubb, a specialist in technology venture capital, who is most well known for being a regular on The Lotus Eaters, an online political talk show known as much for its irreverent style as for its undeniable Britishness. Dan is known for presenting his own segment on the show, Brokenomics. I believe he is currently in the studio for Brokenomics. And yes, this is where he combines his depth of insight into the failing economic systems that grip our country with an on-the-edge sense of humour that is tantalising to watch. So without further ado, Dan, welcome to Public Personalities. It's a delight to have you on here. How are you today?
Thank you very much for having me, and it's good to see you, Jack. I'm looking very much forward to my psychological evaluation. I've been revising for it all morning. So apparently, if you ask me what my greatest flaw is, I'm supposed to say something like, I'm a perfectionist, because it kind of turns it around, you see. And also, when you start showing me the ink blots, no matter how much it looks like a hooker in a pool of blood, do not say that. Like say it looks like a butterfly or something. So yes, yeah. I have revised and I'm ready, and I think I can get through this one well under the radar.
I'm sure you'll be able to hide the very darkest and most psychopathological parts of yourself for this interview.
Well, that is the goal, isn't
sure.
it?
Yeah, yes. Yes, absolutely. So Dan, I did a little bit of research, and it sounds to me as though before you went into venture capital, you were actually in the world of politics. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Oh, yes. So I got interested in politics in the 1997 general election. Not a great place to start, that one. Because I thought, oh, yeah, this Tony Blair chap, everybody seems to like him, but I'm a bit suspicious of him. I was a bit like that detective of Dexter, the only one who could see he's a psychopath. And I was looking at this Tony Blair chap and I was thinking, no, I don't like the cut of your jib, sir. So I got involved in politics then, and so for the first 20 years, it was basically just losing everything, all the time, that sort of culminated in just as I was finishing university, Michael Portillo was having his leadership campaign to take over the party, and I thought, okay, fine, and I'd kind of been dragged along and getting more and more involved in that sort of thing all along. And so I ended up on his campaign team operating out of a little office in Westminster on Barton yep. Street. And I guess if it had gone a different way, I would have just ended up being a politico my whole life. I probably would have, probably be a Tory MP. Well, I'd be an ex-Tory MP now. I mean, I would have almost certainly lost my seat. But anyway, that didn't happen. He didn't win that leadership election. And so I thought, oh, right, well, what am I going to do now? So I went into finance. Funnily enough, I did actually meet Rupert. I'm pretty sure it was Rupert Lowe that I met at that time.
Yeah.
And he offered me a job at Southampton Football Club, not as a player or anything, but, on the business side. And I just said, well, I'm very sorry, but I think football was very, very silly. In retrospect, it could have been a more interesting career than moving spreadsheets up and down. But no, I didn't end up going into politics in the end.
Why did you initially want to get into that fray? Was it simply because of Tony Blair and having a funny smell about him, or anything else motivated you?
Well, I was listening to a Michael Malice interview on the way up in the car this morning, and he was making the argument that psychopaths are just drawn to politics. So I assume it's that, but I'm not sure. But I guess that's why I'm here.
Why do you think that you have psychopathic traits?
Well, because I'm drawn to politics and finance.
Mm.
And, I mean, isn't that just the most enormous red flag for psychopathy? I mean, it kind of is, isn't it?
It depends why. What?
Money and power, I think.
Money and power.
Yes. Yes, they sound good to me.
Would you then say that your move towards finance to finance after politics? Was that a sense then of, well, if I can't have political power, I can have financial power?
I don't know if I was thinking about it in that terms. I think it was all sub, you know, not what it bit, you know, the brain. It was not in the prefrontal cortex or anything. It was just, you know, if I'm going to do something, you know, what is it? And I just kind of found myself being drawn to that, or having the right conversations that ended up getting me invited to the right interviews or something. I'm not exactly sure. You know, it was all based programming at that level. But I just thought, well, you know, you come out of university and your goal is to sort of get a job, become economically independent. And I just thought, well, rather than buggering around with widgets or something, why don't I just work directly with the money? I mean, that just seems a lot easier to me. So I did that. Yes.
So you said you came out of university. What did you do at university and why?
I did economics and politics, and there's a bit of philosophy in there. And I don't know. I just thought it might be interesting. I was completely disappointed by the course. I envisaged going in and having a debate about why Hong Kong was more successful, you know, per capita than you know, a Scandinavian country, a high tax, high welfare country like that, or, you know, that kind of thing. And it wasn't any of that. It was just getting lectured on Marxism every day.
Yep.
So
yep.
I actually got a very bad degree. It was like a second or something. And in fact, I was heading for a third. And then when it came to the final 6 months, I realised that and started getting sort of top firsts in everything. And that was enough to drag me back into a second. But no, I always just did whatever seems the most interesting thing to do at the time.
Right.
Sounds like that from the look on your face, that's another red flag you've spotted.
No, not a red flag. It's just an illuminating flag. It tells me.
Well,
okay,
what colour is it illuminating?
Well, it's illuminating, right. I would say, green.
Oh.
Green, yes, it's a good thing, because it's telling me we're on signal right now. We found what, because if someone tells you, oh, you know, I was interested in the power, I was interested in the prestige and the ability to influence things for its own sake. But then you say, well, I went into a degree which, you know, had a mixture of politics, a mixture of economics, a bit of philosophy, and you're looking forward to having debates on things. That tells me it's a different motivation than power. It's and then you put the title on it. You do what is interesting.
Yes, I'll tell you my philosophy on achieving power. It's kind of because I didn't end up going down that route, but I kind of feel like me or somebody like me should, to stop people who are worse from getting it. And then once you've got it, don't do anything with it. Just leave everybody alone if possible.
Yes.
Because otherwise dark forces will, you know, surmount that hill.
So for you, it's not about controlling. It's not about being in power so much as preventing other people from wielding power against you and taking away your own freedoms.
Yes, I think that's fair. But as long as that is what is actually happening under the, you know, in the base code, and not just the story that I tell myself to mask my own psychopathy. I'm not really sure.
Well, that's why I find it very interesting that you chose a degree, which at least in terms of your hopes was one of intellectual exploration. You were hoping to be talking about, you know, the more interesting and slightly wonkish aspects of the Hongkongese economy. And instead it became a brainwashing exercise in Marxism.
Yes, yes. Yes, very disappointing. I'm always drawn to, I love having a good argument.
Yes.
But it's very difficult to get them. That my demand for arguments is much, much higher than the supply of arguments. And being surrounded by normies my whole life, it's been very disappointing, because you think that, you know, you're having a chat about something and you think, oh, hang on, there's a thread there. Oh, there could be a lovely argument there. And then nothing happens, or they just back away, or just say, oh, well, that's just my opinion or something. They drink their pint and it's, oh, damn, and lost another one. That's why I quite like it here, because, you know, we get to have some good arguments.
Why do you think that people back away from these arguments?
I think because they're normal. I think that's what normal people do, that they avoid confrontation. Whereas I've always quite liked a good bit of confrontation. I mean, I loved the COVID era because yeah. I could stride around shops very clearly not wearing a mask. And then every so often somebody would confront you and you could tell them how bloody silly they are. I enjoyed that. But no, generally, people are just not built like that, are they? You know, most people are followers. They're sort of sheep. Whereas I kind of always want to be, you know, the guy who's not doing whatever the thing is. And I get why a population as a whole needs a certain number of people like that, just a fairly limited number of them, because they can go off and do crazy things. And most of them will end up being eaten by a bear or something. But some of them will discover new pastures and then the sheep can follow up. So I just assume that I'm one of them.
You're one of those who's going to go into chaos to bring back something of value for the rest of society.
Yes, bring order to it, hopefully.
Yeah, makes sense. So what is it about a debate that you enjoy when you see that thread? What is it about you that grabs your attention?
Because you might lose. There's a challenge there. It's a bit like why do you play a video game? You know, when you play a video game, why do you just not immediately put it on the easiest difficulty setting and enable cheats? Because it's all about that you might lose, and then you feel something.
If you would like to see the full version of this premium video, please head over to lotuseaters.com and subscribe to gain full access to all of our premium content.